Perhaps you haven't considered this on three levels, not just one level. On the one hand, it is the story of creation, of how God created the world and how it shattered. It was imperfect, and the process by which it'll come back to its primal whole, its harmony as it existed beforehand. It is also the story of the Jewish people. In other words, it is a second level narrative where the Jewish people had lived in harmony with God. They were expelled from their land. The temple was destroyed. They went into diaspora, into exile, and they will ultimately be redeemed and restored. Tikkun, which is that the Hebrew word for restoration, is equivalent to the Messianic era, right? When the Messiah returns, all of the dispersed Jews, so too the world, the cosmos, will be repaired to its total unity. And thirdly, it is the story of every individual Jewish soul. From the original sin, they don't use the word the original sin, that's a Christian term, but nevertheless the idea of Adam being banished from the Garden of Eden in the book of Genesis. From that moment on, there was a flaw in the soul of every individual. Everyone lived in captivity, being held in the world of the klipah, the world of evil, which needed to be overcome and redeemed through the process of tikkun. Tikkun, therefore, is a kind of vital psychological process by which the soul is repaired. The cosmos, the Jewish people, and the soul altogether. And the critical point of this remarkable myth is that who is the agent for this? According to the myth of Luria, according as Sholem describes it, even the Shekhinah, even the divine presence, is held in captivity by the Klipah. And therefore, the agent of restoring this harmony is the Jewish people themselves. Every individual Jew, through his observance of the commandments, and through his participation in mystical speculation and activity, and through prayer and through human activity, social confraternities, ultimately, every individual has the responsibility of redeeming the world, of bringing about tikkun. So therefore, tikkun is a process which places the emphasis not on God, but on humanity. It is a very, very interesting, you know, humanism is going on in Italy in the 16th century. You can't say that the Safed Kabbalists were humanists, but nevertheless, the ultimate import of this concept is a humanistic concept. It places the emphasis upon human beings striving to make the world better, combating evil, overcoming evil, and creating a perfect harmony. Now you see the power of this particular myth and the way Sholem describes it. This is a reaction to 1492. The Jewish people are at the lowest point in their history, and now ultimately they overcome their misery by entering into a new relationship with God. Jewish mysticism is the driving force to give them hope, give them a direction, give them a sense, a trajectory which will allow them to bring about the Messianic era. Sholem also argued that Luriana Kabbalah set the seeds for the creation of a messianic movement in the 17th century called Sabbatianism, surrounding the figure of Shabtai Tzvi. We will speak about Shabtai Tzvi, and we'll go over this in our next lecture, but bear that in mind. That will come up a little later on. Now, that is Sholem's reconstruction. It's a great story. I remember learning it as a graduate student and being very satisfied with it. I mean, just to read his beautiful English, the way he described this and so on, it was a great experience. But in recent years, as in the case of all of the history of the Kabbalah, modern scholars have challenged this thesis. So let us mention at least some of their approaches. Moshe Idel, who we also mentioned in a previous lecture, has argued that Lurianic notions weren't as novel and innovative as Sholem had suggested, nor were they so messianic. In other words, the process of tikkun is not necessarily messianism. Tikkun is a very slow process, gathering the sparks. Overcoming evil doesn't happen overnight, as we know, right? We just keep getting mired in evil all over again. It doesn't happen that well. So essentially, we're describing a very gradual moral reform process. Maybe to use the word reform here for tikkun is another way of describing it. Tikkun is to restore, to reform, and so on. But clearly, it's not necessarily messianic. In other words, while Shabtai Tzvi and his movement in the 17th century is all about messianism, as we will see, in this case, it's not so easy to describe Lurianic Kabbalah as being messianic. Moreover, it's not so clear how these notions spread to the larger Jewish world. According to Idel, perhaps they didn't spread so quickly. Luria died, of course, 3 years later. His disciples brought his ideas to Italy, and there they scattered throughout the entire Jewish diaspora. But it took a long time. And Cordoveran Kabbalah, the other form of Kabbalah, Moses Cordovero, simply didn't go away. And therefore, Edel argues, it wasn't so clear that this wonderful theory immediately took the world by storm and transformed the Jewish world. So perhaps Sholem is arguing. And also he argues, Kabbalists don't react, that is, Edel argues, Kabbalists don't react so clearly to historical events. And therefore, the connection between 1492 and a theory of Kabbalah that emerges in 1569, there's a big gap here. How do you explain that? Are these people really reacting to a tragedy that took place almost a century earlier?